Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, we're going to tell you the story of how a legal business model called multi-level marketing can turn into a pyramid scheme. And when that pyramid scheme goes online, how it can become a seductive force for spreading lies, disinformation, and even conspiracy theories.
My name is Jessica Hickson. I am 30 years old. I currently live in St. Louis area. And I was a part of It Works for 5 years. Hey guys, I just wanted to make a quick video and tell you guys my why I decided to join It Works and why I do what I do. It Works sells a variety of different, what they call health and wellness products. They were initially known for their skinny wrap is what they called it. So it's just a wrap you put on that allegedly contours you. Anyway, so I tried this wrap, and in the morning I took it off. I was like, holy crap, like it works. It really works. So I actually didn't know what an MLM was before I joined one. I just saw my friend posting about it, and she was talking about money that she was personally making. At the time, my husband had just gone active duty, and we were at our first duty station. And so we were sharing a car. I was nannying here and there. But other than that, it was really hard for me to work outside of the house with his schedule. So I thought, if this is my friend and I know her personally and she's making money with it, then I might as well give it a shot because I can't work outside of the house really anyway. I want to be a mom. I want to be a mom really bad. And I want to be able to have my kids grow up with me by their side. I don't want other people experiencing their first. I was like, all right, let's do this. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I did research on how to be successful. I think the difference in my story and other people's stories when they're in MLMs is that the majority of people we know lose money. But the difference with me was that I was bringing in more money than I could have ever imagined bringing in with a regular job. And so that was a large part of me sticking it out because I thought, if I'm making this amount of money, other people can too.
So start posting. Host your launch party. So if you have not already, get with your upline and schedule a launch party. A launch party is just a party that you host or that you host at your upline's house or whatever, where you just invite your closest friends and family and tell them about your new business endeavor and ask them to support you.
Like, I saw red flags along the way, but when you're surrounded by everyone who believes the same thing, you're taught to turn off that voice inside your head that's telling you these are red flags, you need to run away. We didn't actually have to like carry an inventory, which is one of their big selling points. However, with that being said, we were highly encouraged to keep product on hand in case someone wanted to buy it offhand or to show that you were using the products. And a lot of leaders wouldn't even speak to someone beneath them if they weren't running their monthly auto shipment. The compensation plan was structured in such a way that if you weren't maintaining ranks, you weren't getting bonuses and you weren't making a significant income. So a lot of people had a huge incentive at the end of the month to buy a bulk order of products in order to maintain that rank so that their paycheck wasn't cut in half the next month. I think the biggest thing with the products is that they're all made out to be a quick fix. And I have a before and after photo that is floating around It Works because I did have good results with the products. But the problem with it is that they are leaving out huge details about my weight loss. So in the before photo, I had just had my daughter and I had 2 babies in 2 years. And I wouldn't go as far as to say that I had an eating disorder in the photos that are circulating of me right now.
But I would say that there were times that I, you know, went a little more hungry than I should have, or I worked out far too much just to have those before and after photos to show people that my products are working. My husband was deploying, and at the time I had, I think, a 2 and 3 year old. So the months leading up to his deployment, I just wanted to spend with my family. I didn't get on any of our team calls, which we had one weekly. And so my husband ended up leaving. I was talking to my upline shortly after she had called to do like a check-in on me and just say, how are things going? And at that point, it was very fresh and new, him leaving. So I was a wreck. I was just crying. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. At the end of the call, she just said, okay, well, I just wanted to let you know that I have removed you as a leader in our team page because we need someone who's going to lead by example, and you're not doing that right now. Everything that someone above me said was taken as fact.
It always works. Everything about our company works. The compensation plan works. The people work. We work. The products, all the above. I love this company.
So even if I truly in my heart believed that it wasn't true, I had to portray it in a way that it was true for my team. And then once you do that so much, you start to believe it yourself.
The biggest obstacle anybody needs to overcome is your belief in yourself.
Yeah, MLMs would not exist if they weren't able to tell any lies at all.
That was Jessica Hickson. Jessica does not support the kind of disinformation that she experienced on her MLM. She doesn't support any kind of disinformation at all. And she left ItWorks in 2020. And she says that quitting caused her to lose everything, her income, her friends, her daily routine. But in January of this year, with encouragement from her neighbor, Jessica began sharing her story on YouTube. Well, Amanda Montell joins us now. She's author of Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism. She's with us from Los Angeles. Amanda, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
What did you hear in Jessica's story?
Yeah, in Jessica's story, I heard a story I've heard before. I've heard a story of someone who received a larger-than-life promise from someone they knew and trusted to get involved with the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be an entrepreneur, to own their own business without having to leave their kids, to work around the obstacles that were preventing her from accessing the dignified labor market, and to achieving almost a spoofed version of the American dream, only to be bait and switched, psychologically manipulated, and left with little.
Wow. So you heard a lot, essentially. Let's start with some of the basics, though. For people who haven't heard of these, what are MLMs?
Sure. So MLMs, which stands for multi-level marketing, also known as relationship marketing, direct sales, I often refer to them as the legally loopholed fraternal twin of the pyramid scheme. They are these pay and recruit organizations powered not by salaried employees, but by coaches, affiliates, distributors, international business owners, whatever sort of euphemistic label the organization chooses for its recruits, who are lured in with the promise of this amazing opportunity to become a mompreneur, as often non-working wives and mothers are the target for most of these MLMs. They can earn a full-time living with part-time work. All they have to do is pay a buy-in fee and then meet certain monthly quotas, which is what your source was talking about. They need to unload product. It doesn't matter on who. They could buy it up themselves. And they also need to recruit their friends and family to become sellers themselves. The problem is that when you have so many people constantly recruiting, the market floods exponentially with the dearth of too many sellers, and you find very small group at the top of this pyramid shape that are making money at the expense of a screwed over mass at the base.
Mm. Well, you know, but I'm wondering how the ones that are very active now, the MLMs that are very active now, like how are they different from I suppose the I'm thinking Amway or Mary Kay or the ones that have been that were very, very pre-internet. What is there something different that's going on now?
Yes. Well, MLMs are expert rebranders. And so while groups like Amway and Mary Kay and Tupperware, their sellers were the sort of Susie Homemaker type that you might picture in the 40s and 50s when MLMs were promised to be the best thing that happened to women since they got the vote. Now MLMs exploit the sort of Pinterest feminism and natural, holistic, organic proclivities of a younger audience. MLMs will have chicer updated packaging. They will use language like girl boss, boss babe, fempire, CEO. They'll capitalize on whatever trendy pseudo-feminist buzzwords are resonating with people at the time.
Okay. Wow. So the language is really, it's one of the critical factors here. I mean, your book is about the language of fanaticism. I also wonder about how much more potent, I mean, we're talking about a language that spread through social media, right? Is that right, Amanda?
Yeah, absolutely. Because now you're not only promoting the business to your friends and family in person, you're promoting them on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook.
And so, but so what else are people promoting though? Because you called it the sort of the legal loophole, right? For pyramid schemes. In a sense, people being taken by such schemes isn't new. But what I'm fascinated by is it seems like mistruths or unleading statements about the products themselves are not the only thing that's happening now.
Right. Well, MLMs have workarounds to shut down independent thinking and questioning whenever anyone would try to poke a hole in a company, ask why it seems so similar to a pyramid scheme. They have a roster of what are called thought-terminating cliches, which is a classic cult tactic where you have a stock expression easily memorized, easily repeated, that's aimed at halting that scrutiny. So in MLMs, they'll often say things like, well, this can't be a pyramid scheme. Pyramid schemes are illegal. Or this isn't a pyramid scheme's real bureaucratic jobs are.
Wow. Well, Amanda Montell, stand by here. Amanda's author of Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism. And we're talking today about MLMs or multi-level marketing schemes and how they've actually become a potent force for spreading disinformation as well. We'll get to that when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about MLMs or multi-level marketing businesses and what they're doing now, what they're selling now, and most importantly, what they're getting people to believe now and how MLMs may be a potent force right now for spreading lies, disinformation, and even conspiracy theories. I'm joined today by Amanda Montell. She's author of Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism. And Amanda, we're already getting a lot of comments coming in online. Mary Trihorn says, so interesting. I definitely see new at-home moms get into this and gain much confidence at the beginning. Then they lose money and end up with a bunch of product they can't sell. And then Erin Michelle says, LuLaRoe was really taking off when I first became a mom. I knew a lot of other moms who got caught up in this scam and tried to unload their stock at yard sales. But Erin says, thankfully, I thought their clothes were hideous and never bought any. Well, let's turn now to Stephanie McNeil, who's senior culture reporter for BuzzFeed News. She's with us from Brooklyn. Stephanie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you spent a lot of time reporting on LuLaRoe, right? So for folks who don't know, and I'll be completely honest, I guess I'm just not plugged in enough myself. I don't really know what LuLaRoe is. What is it?
Yeah, you're not alone. It's kind of a phenomenon that didn't take hold, I think, among people living in big cities, but was super, super popular in more rural areas and in suburbs all across the country. So LuLaRoe is a clothing company that started in 2013. It was founded by a woman named Deanne Stidham and her husband. And they launched initially with maxi skirts, but what really helped them take off was leggings. And I don't know if you remember, but in like 2013, 2014, everyone was really into like multicolored leggings, and leggings at leisure, I feel like, had finally broken out of the stigma of the whole leggings can't be pants debate. People were wearing a lot more at leisure than usual. And LuLaRoe's leggings had this quality that people described them as buttery soft. And people became obsessed with these leggings. I think they're for a few reasons. I think they were really soft and comfortable for one. But also I think, you know, they were really good for moms, especially moms who weren't working in a traditional office setting, whether that's from home or being a stay-at-home mom, because you could look put together and cute in them, but, you know, they're forgiving, you know, mm-hmm. once you're postpartum, you can wear the same leggings before and after. You can go to the park, you can, you know, crawl around on the floor. And, you know, but you don't feel like you're wearing pajamas, or you don't feel like okay. you're wearing workout clothes. You feel a little bit more put together.
So they got really popular. So you're saying that they got really popular, but then what's, you know, what's the problem there?
Well, so the problem is that LuLaRoe is a multi-level marketing company, which you guys just spoke about so eloquently. And people started signing up to sell the clothing without, you know, realizing the pitfalls of the multi-level marketing model. And also LuLaRoe went from, you know, having a couple thousand to about a million sellers in mid-2010s to basically overnight having, you know, 80,000 retailers and doing $1 billion in sales in just a couple of years. So this company just exploded, and it did so through a network of individual direct salespeople. And a bunch of things started happening where people thought they were going to be able to make all of this money. They thought they were going to be able to basically start their own clothing boutique out of their home. Mm-hmm. But the market got super, super saturated. They couldn't sell the clothing. And then it was just kind of a cascade of other issues, which I can go into. I don't know how much interest you have in the LuLaRoe saga.
Well, actually, let me turn back to Amanda here, and love to hear you guys talk with each other as well, because Amanda, you also wrote about this company, about LuLaRoe, and I'm really interested in sort of how the mental shaping happens for people who join these MLMs. Because I think it was in your article, Amanda, that I saw that a lot of their most fervent sellers took to calling the co-founders of the company mom and dad. Do I have that right?
That's right. So there was a lot of language at play here that made the company so much more than a company and so much more than a scam. So MLMs are not just your average financial scam. They are these complex and life-consuming organizations with a language and a culture all their own. They have these strong and pervasive ideologies that are missionary in character. And they have these founding leaders that recruits come to worship on the level of a spiritual guru, you know. know, these leaders are thought to be all-knowing, charismatic, enlightened, and there are measures in place to make sure that you do not question them. Everyone in the company is uplifted with labels to make them feel like they're superior to everyone else in the economy. And there are labels there to lambast everyone who's not involved with the business. In fact, recruits are encouraged to either get people they know involved or snip them out of their life. So incredibly codependent relationships form within these groups, especially because financially you're depending on the selling and recruiting of everybody above and below you. Uh-huh. So under that type of pressure, things can get quite cultish.
Okay, so there you go, right? I was just going to ask you. You've used phrases like thought terminating cliches, a profound kind of dependency of worship of founders. I mean, you are describing what sounds like a cult. Are they?
Well, the thing is that cults fall along a spectrum. This word is incredibly subjective and judgment-loaded, often sensationalized, and can mean something wildly different depending on the context. Many of the scholars that I spoke to for my book Cultish don't even use the word, at least not formally. So you really have to be more specific when you're thinking about what might be a cult or not. The word is not enough. And when you look at LuLaRoe recruits, for example, you know, their uniform might be blonde highlights and a French bulldog pattern pair of leggings rather than a shaved head and a white robe, but the psychological influence that goes on in cult scenarios is still there, absolutely.
Okay, so Stephanie McNeil, what do you think about that? And what have you learned based on your reporting on companies like LuLaRoe?
I think that your book title, Amanda, is so spot on. It's like, I feel like cult is such a loaded word that I'm a little reticent to call LuLaRoe a cult, but I think cult-ish is a great description. I think one of the things that really fascinated me about LuLaRoe from the beginning was it wasn't just a business for these women, although obviously that played a big part in why they were so devoted to it. It really became a lifestyle, a friend group, a sisterhood in a way that I think is really remarkable. And I think I, in my reporting, have always tried really hard to emphasize because I think it's hard for people to understand, okay, why would you join something like this? Like, why would you spend $10,000 up front to start your own quote unquote boutique? With no guarantee of return on investment. You know, I think a lot of people can look at that and be like, you know, that makes no sense. Why would you do that? But if you get into the clothing and you start seeing all of the lives and you see how all of these people seem to be friends and everyone is so supportive of each other and everyone really feels like, you know, aspirational to you, I think that can be really, really powerful. And once you get into this upline downline situation where you're part of a group run by kind of a queen bee at the top, that can really warp how you view things, how you view your business. You know, I think like what the girl from It Works was talking about was really, really powerful. And that's something that we see in a lot of these companies. It's like, you're spending, I mean, people have told me that they would spend 10, 12 hours a day on the LuLaRoe business. So imagine you're online spending all day in these webinars, in these group chats, in these Zooms, just talking about this all day, you know, being fed information that, you know, may or may not be true. And I think another big thing in these kind of companies is there's a lot of fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. So you might have a friend, for example, who started around the same time as you, who's posting, hey, I'm doing so great, I'm making all this money. In actuality, people have said that they would post photos of checks, and this isn't from LuLaRoe, this is from another MLM. They would post checks that they said they had gotten from the company that were fake. They would post a picture of their car and say that the MLM bought them the car. That wasn't true, but it was all about if you perform this success outwardly on the internet, then the success will come to you.
Right.
And that also can be really powerful.
Well, so this is really fascinating because it sounds like you're describing that people almost enter a hermetically sealed information environment, if I can just put it that way. And then they're always putting forth this like positive message of success, even if it's not true. And I mean, we're getting, again, just tons of comments online here. Maureen O'Keefe says, I just don't like it when long lost friends call me up to hang out and then proceed to pitch their products to me. I get excited to hear from a person I haven't seen in a while, but it isn't me they want to catch up with. It's my wallet. And then Kathleen Haynes says, many years ago, a friend organized a dinner to celebrate my birthday, and one of the guests hijacked the dinner to pitch the MLM she was involved in. Needless to say, people stopped inviting her out after that.
Oh, my goodness.
but I want to talk a little bit more about this relationship, not just with recruiting and the messaging. So just listen for a minute, if we can, to Liz Joy. She was a high-ranking distributor for an essential oils company, Young Living, and she amassed quite a following, hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers. She left Young Living and later started with Modare, another multi-level marketing company. And she and her husband now sell supplements like liquid collagen and recruit people to join their team.
If you're interested in doing this as a business and having Brian and I train you on basically how to do social media, how to do social selling, we are building our team. We've got about 100 sellers, social marketers, actually they're called. And it's really, really exciting. People are winning trips. People are winning iPads. People are ranking up. It's been the most fast growth I've ever seen. And I've been doing this a long time. So we're really fortunate and happy to be in this position and just want to spread the good word and teach you guys everything we know.
Amanda, that last sentence that Liz Joy uttered there, wanting to spread the good word. I mean, that's overtly a religious language. Do we see
that's
a lot
right.
of that?
We do. There's no coincidence that a lot of MLMs are explicitly Christian and religious affiliated. In LuLaRoe, for example, recruits were pumped with proverbs to ingrain them with the feeling that this wasn't just a business, it was church. They would use phrases like, join the movement, we're one big family, we are connected, you are never alone, sisterhood, and endless talk of blessings, blessed to be a part of this community, helping families, blessing lives. This is missionary work. Oftentimes in these religious communities, when someone comes to you with the promise of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, that sounds not unlike a message you would receive at church. But whether you're religious or not, MLMs exploit the type of values that we're all brought up with under Protestant, capitalist, Western American culture. Values like individualism, ambition, progress, and meritocracy, or the notion that those who succeed in life really deserve it, and those who don't simply don't work hard enough. So if you've been involved with this MLM, and you're not succeeding, you're not becoming a millionaire within a year like it was promised, they're going to gaslight you into thinking that that's not the company's fault, that's your fault. You didn't believe in yourself enough. You didn't have that drive, that fortitude to become a rags-to-riches story, to achieve what was supposed to be a guarantee. So again, MLMs don't require some sort of disturbed or intellectually deficient person to become involved. They just want someone who's incredibly idealistic, who's been brought up under Protestant capitalism, and who's open to the idea when an old classmate or their close friend or a cousin comes to them and tells them, this business could change your life.
Jill Van Vliet on Facebook tells us that her father died when she was 14. And then she says, my mom was then a widow with three kids. She's always been very religious, so she was an easy target for members of her church who were also involved in Amway, etc. They preyed on her need for income after her husband's death and started signing her up for all kinds of MLM scams. She trusted them because they were like-minded fellow Christians. And Jill says she's not surprised that there's a demonstrable link or a link of some kind between religion and MLM. I mean, I would say, and Amanda, I'm just going to steal your language here, that because of the internet, in a sense, there's a religion for everybody now online, and it can be completely all-consuming. But at the very beginning of the show, I put out a thesis here that these MLMs, because they're founded in a sense, I think we've kind of proven that in the discussion so far, on at least some forms of disinformation or fakery or, you know, fake it till you make it, that somehow when coupled with social media is providing a new wind tunnel almost for disinformation to spread farther and faster and then turn into something else. So, Amanda, are we seeing that disinformation then turn into, I don't know, flat out conspiracy theories and the spreading of those?
Absolutely. So if you would think of a Venn diagram with MLMs in one circle, anti-vaxxers, wellness warriors, New Agers in another circle, and classic conspiracy theorists, say, you know, QAnoners, flat earthers, Holocaust deniers, and the like in the third circle, the convergence there is a deep mistrust of mainstream institutions, whether that's bureaucratic business, the mainstream media, the government, the healthcare system. During times of social crisis and turbulence, and I think we're in one of those times right now, alternative affiliations tend to spike. We saw that in the late 60s and 70s with the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement, the Kennedy assassinations. And now with so much ideological separation and political turbulence, the pandemic, and certainly the internet, there is now a cult for everyone. And if you've lost trust in these mainstream institutions, if you've internalized a message of sovereignty, the idea that you should take your own health, your own life, your own career into your own hands, you're going to be able to find others who believe the same.
Well, Stephanie McNeil, I'm definitely going to want to hear more from you on that when we come back. So Stephanie and Amanda, stand by. We're talking about MLMs, or multi-level marketing businesses, and how, by virtue of the way they're structured and how they recruit people, how they might be potent forces for spreading not just disinformation, but as Amanda said, even conspiracy theories. So we'll talk a lot more about that when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Just want to give you a little preview about what we'll be talking about next week. Supply chains, international chip shortages. Have you tried to buy a new car recently? So we're going to try to understand what's behind this international chip shortage and why everything from cars to smartphones to game consoles and even appliances suddenly are so hard to get. So we want to hear from you about whether you've tried to buy one of these items and what that has been like in the past 18 months. How long have you had to wait? Did you ever get one? Did you just give up? And also, are you a business owner who is trying to, you know, sell these products, or you make products that rely on the kinds of chips that we have this vast shortage of now? How would you improve supply chains? Call us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for our show next week on Monday. And today we are talking about MLMs, or multi-level marketing businesses, and how they can be conduits for spreading lies, disinformation, and even conspiracy theories. I'm joined today by Amanda Montell. She's author of Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism. And Stephanie McNeil joins us as well. She's senior culture reporter for BuzzFeed News. And we are getting so many comments, Amanda and Stephanie, online. Let me just read another one here. This is Pat Joe, who says, I was in the Amway cult in the early 90s. It happened so gradually. I listened to a tape every day, read positive thinking books, attended rallies and huge events where the diamond couples shared their stories. She used to drive 200 miles each way to a rally in one night. And Pat says, I'm so ashamed of how I manipulated people and especially those who couldn't afford it, including myself. Single mothers. She got sucked in big time, maxing out credit cards, neglecting her children, and preying on friends and family. Pat Joe says, it's one of the biggest regrets of my life. Well, let's listen now to a little bit more of the disinformation part of this story. Well, Wendy Selvig is a distributor for Young Living, which sells essential oils. And her website identifies her as being at the gold rank. That's the rank obtained by about 0.1% of distributors. She's also got a podcast where she shares information about the benefits of oils. And she also shares other information like this.
Someone in my family had COVID 2 weeks ago, and I got ivermectin. I found out how to get it, and I'm going to tell you guys how to get it. I got ivermectin, and within 24 hours, we saw an incredible turnaround. Within 48 hours, he's like brand new. And it's so, so sad when the medicines work, but they don't want you to have it. And then you need to ask why, first of all, and think about profit, think about money, and think about corruption, think about politics, think about world population control.
That's Wendy Selvig, a distributor for Young Living. And just to be clear, ivermectin is not approved by the FDA to treat COVID-19. So Stephanie McNeil, Wendy goes on quite a journey just in that one little clip there, which is about 30 seconds long. How common is that, this overlap between MLMs and extreme, distrust in government, which then is leading to her spreading disinformation?
It's fairly common, especially, I would say, among multi-level marketing companies that have this kind of pseudoscience goal embedded in them, like Young Living. I would say I have personally seen a lot of Young Living or other essential oils multi-level marketers on Instagram who have gone a little bit farther down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theory and, started believing in QAnon or started believing in another conspiracy theory having to do with COVID. And I think it makes sense. I think, it's one thing to appreciate essential oils and, more natural modes of healing. I think, essential oils can be great, for certain things, but these companies really push the envelope and a lot of people kind of take it very far where it's, I've seen people go into not just, essential oils are good for, homeopathic things, but they can actually cure disease better than Western medicine, or, they can keep disease from you in a way that's a lot better than Western medicine. And just going really far into conspiracy theory, about conspiracy theories about health. So I think it's not really a far leap if you already believe that, big, big things like cancer, for example, can be helped or even cured by essential oils to also then, believe in pseudoscience about COVID-19. It's almost the next logical step.
Well, can I just jump in here? Because you mentioned QAnon, and I want to play a little tape here. This is Alyssa Schmidt, a distributor for an MLM called Monate, which sells skincare and hair care products. And Alyssa's Instagram profile is full of reviews of the products she uses and sells, and of course, the encouragement for others to join her team. But then she's also got stories like this one on her Instagram.
But I just have been thinking a lot about the evil that is just so prevalent in our world. And a lot of people have been super shocked when they find out about sex trafficking and these elite pedophile rings and just the people that may be involved in it. And there's just a lot of shock and a lot of questions and wondering, how does this happen? How do we get here? And you guys, I just want to say, and this may not be the answer you want to hear, but it is happening right under our noses.
Amanda Montell, You know, she's just, Alyssa Schmidt in that tape is just asking some questions, right? So, I mean, social media companies have tried to crack down on overt conspiracy theories and lies of the QAnon variety, or they've flagged posts at least. But you can't do that on a post where someone's just asking questions and saying, hey, here's what I think. So, but how influential is someone like Alyssa in spreading this kind of conspiracy theory?
Sure. Well, we think of cults as these groups that exist on remote communes, but social media has made it such that there is now a cult for everyone. Social media influencers who are no longer hawking just vacations and eye cream, but answers to your very life and afterlife, spirituality, pseudoscience. These folks develop these incredible cult followings, in a sense. And it's again, as Stephanie was mentioning, it's not a far leap when your company that you work for is encouraging you to have ideas of toxic positivity. You know, all you need is to believe and you'll become a millionaire in a year. Well, the next natural step is all you need is to use essential oils to cure COVID-19. All you need is to follow me to know the answers, to get closure during this incredibly tumultuous socio-political time. If you want to believe in certain conspiratorial ideas, these folks, and there are a dime a dozen on Instagram, will give you license to do that.
You know, I keep thinking of Jessica Hickson, who shared her story with us at the beginning of the show, right? She was a mom. She was a military wife, right? They were moving around a lot. Her husband was, you know, extremely busy with his military career. She talked about feeling isolated. So here was a ready-made community, right? I mean, that to me, this seems to be like one of the most potent forces here. Like, it is a community that all you have to do is just sign up, pay a little, and this structure, this system of belief is created, it springs up around you, and all you have to do is turn on your computer every day and feel that sense of community. That's incredibly powerful, Amanda, isn't it?
Very powerful. So many scholars have talked about one of the most profound human drives is belonging, connection. Scholars have spoken about how religion doesn't even really need to involve God necessarily, because what religion provides is meaning, community, ritual, identity. These are things that can be found in MLM organizations. So if you, say, have lost trust in the church that you grew up in, have lost trust in the government, in the healthcare system, in bureaucratic business, here is a ready-made group that is there to radicalize values that you might already hold and love bomb you and support you. Of course, they'll turn their backs on you as soon as you start to question. But for that short amount of time in the beginning, that sense of community is It's the most profound human drive of all.
And people don't, I mean, for understandable reasons, I mean, evolutionary reasons, we don't want to give up that sense of community. But Stephanie McNeil, I feel like it's a big price to pay when one of the things that you do as being part of that community is both believe and then spread disinformation that's harmful to you and, you know, the country that you live in. But I'm still not quite clear on, you know, how influential are folks who are in these MLMs who then end up spreading disinformation? Do we know? Can we measure that in any way?
It's hard to measure, but I will say that one thing that I believe that has made MLMs in our generation a lot more potent of a force is the fact that we have the internet and social media. So one thing I always like to say when I talk about this is, you know, if you were selling Mary Kay or something in the 80s, your group was limited in a way. You know, even if you were at the very, very top of the pyramid, you could only ever really recruit people who you met in person and who you could physically sell to. Now what we've seen with these, especially for some reason, these essential oil MLMs is your pool of people you can influence is unlimited, essentially. And so what we've seen with a lot of these big essential oil sellers, Liz Joy is a great example of this, is not only are they able to make a ton of money by selling these essential oils, they also are able to become social media influencers, which not only is a completely distinct source of revenue, but gives them an incredible amount of power because they can recruit people indefinitely from wherever. And one thing that makes influencers such a big cash cow for marketers is people really want to buy things from people that they follow. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that could go for disinformation as well. You know, yeah. I personally have people who are bloggers who I've followed for a decade at this point. And if they post something, I'm inclined to, and it's something I want to buy, I'm inclined to buy it because I trust them. So that influence that they have is incredibly powerful. And if you're someone who kind of has a huge platform where you have 500,000 people who watch your stories, you can really wield that in really destructive ways.
Yeah. Stephanie, when you're talking about that trust factor, it's so important here. And I link that to then, given the way that the ubiquity of the internet here, it's just a world that you could end up being in 24/7, which I also feel is quite different than what we had beforehand, where you sort of had to purposefully enter, say, a religious space or and then purposefully exit it. But we, you know, now it's just everywhere all the time. Now, I should say, though, that we're getting some comments from people with different views here. Like Carrie Ching Simpson says, I sold Party Light for 4 years and I really enjoyed it. For about 1 year, I made quite a bit of money because I really worked hard at it, but I didn't like having to be gone every night and every weekend to grow my business, so I stopped. It was not cultish, Carrie says. All the trainings taught us how to sell and they energized us for the product, but there was no religious or family indoctrination. Now, Amanda Montell, that got me thinking of some of the characteristics that you described of many MLM sellers. You know, valuing independence, wanting to take control of your own finances, your own life, your own body, trying to figure out how to do these things while meeting the responsibilities of the rest of your life, specifically thinking about moms out there. There is nothing wrong with any of those characteristics. And yet, it gets turned into something different. So what I want to know is, what are the tools or the solutions from stopping the exploitation that seems to happen later and then the spread of disinformation? I mean, for example, Jacob Evans says, why are scams like this even legal? I mean, what's the answer to that, Amanda?
Well, there's a long answer.
Unfortunately, we've just got a couple minutes.
Okay. Well, MLMs are legally loopholed because of a precedent-setting case involving Amway from a few decades ago. The Direct Selling Association is incentivized to, the government is incentivized to keep their ties with the Direct Selling Association because they have very strong political ties and donate handsomely to mostly Republican presidential candidates' coffers. So there is this sort of toxic symbiosis between the Direct Selling Association and the government. The government is not really motivated to completely shut down the Direct Selling Association or MLMs in general because they benefit from the industry. I also want to comment on the commenter from before that not every MLM will employ equally cultish tactics. However, the Direct Selling Association in general is its own sort of pyramid scheme because let's say you get involved with one MLM and it doesn't work for you. The odds are the pattern shows that you're going to get involved with another one. That's what a lot of people do. And just because one given MLM may not have negatively affected you doesn't mean it didn't negatively affect lots of other people. I often like to make an analogy to toxic one-on-one relationships, abusive relationships. You could have a very good relationship with someone who used to abuse other people. So it's all about perspective.
Well, Amanda Montell, author of Cultish, The Language of Fanaticism, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Amanda was with us from Los Angeles. And Stephanie McNeil, senior culture reporter for BuzzFeed News, with us from Brooklyn. Stephanie, was absolutely fascinating having you on. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much.
And folks, thank you for all your social media comments today. Hop online. As always, we're on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And let us know what you think. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.